welcome everyone to the Screamcast. I am your host, Sean DeRager, and with us, as always, Brad Henderson.
This is bullshit.
Jesus Christ. Brian Sauer joins us. What's up, man?
What's up, Brian?
How you guys doing, gentlemen?
Good.
I'm happy Brian's here.
I'm happy to be here early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. So Brian and I've been talking back and forth here, and I think we're gonna have a Brian Sauer episode once a month, sure. And
yes.
Then and if things, if you can join us for more, great. So
yes. That's, work's been a little crazy. I apologize to you, gentlemen.
You know,
my exhaustion level much higher than it has been previously.
It's all good. I mean, it's not like we get paid for this, so it's like, you know, work comes first.
Paid.
Brad gets paid.
Brad gets paid in sexual favors. Moving on, like it's
what?
It's
what the fuck?
I don't know. Through the internet, we sexed all the time.
Looking like 2 minutes in the show already.
Yep, that's right. So it's episode 50, and you know, I don't like all those, you know, bullshit anniversary shows. Last week was our year anniversary. Like, exactly. But, you know.
Yeah. But we didn't post it on the day.
We didn't,
fucking,
because I had a vacation.
Ruined.
I had gone on vacation.
Everything's ruined.
You know. But, you know, I don't really like those anniversary shows anymore. If you've listened to a lot of podcasts, like, sometimes people, like, they're like, oh, this is our best clips or our best bloopers for 2000 whatever, and blah, blah, blah.
It's like a greatest hits album. Like,
yeah.
When bands sign a five album deal, and they're like, well, the fifth album's going to be our greatest hits.
Right, exactly. And they
put shit on there you've never even heard of.
I always skip those. So
you would.
So whatever.
Support,
you know, we
don't
could be cool about
anything.
I don't. I don't at all. Nothing. I live in the moment, Brad. You know, I'm not one of these idiots that collects autographs. You know, you meet like a movie star or somebody.
You're an idiot that
you know
that collects Studio Ghiblets.
Studio Ghibli. Studio Ghibli is awesome. There's actual artistic merit there. All right, moving ahead. We're getting here. We're going off the rails already. So, today we are covering the newest Scream Factory. Well, technically not the newest because New Year's Evil's out today, but the newest-ish Scream Factory release. Robert Englund in The Phantom of the Opera. We're also covering, we had to cover this, Jake Gyllenhaal? Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler. And then we're introducing a new thing this week. We'll be doing Pick of the Week. Type thing. So
you want to explain what Pick of the Week is?
It's you know, a favorite Blu-ray of ours that's been released in the past few months or whatever, and we feel
not
like
a few
you guys
months
or year.
I thought we said older.
Okay. Older.
Yeah, something we haven't like
mentioned we haven't,
on
yeah,
the show.
Exactly. Mine's still a newer.
Watch, you're gonna pick. Fucking you're gonna mention Phantom of the Opera.
That's my Pick of the Week. But before we got all that, let's jump into Blu-ray announcements.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
So, first, I'll go and bring up the Grindhouse bullshit. The Beyond and Murder Mafia Style has been delayed once again. Massacre Mafia Style. God damn it. Hold on.
No, leave it in there. I want people to know.
No, I've been tweeting freaking Murder Mafia Style. Who's the asshole right now? Me? Who's the idiot? you can't take tweets back. You can delete them, but you can't take them back. The Beyond and Massacre Mafia Style, excuse me. I'm not as, you know, seasoned like Brad is. I've actually never heard of Massacre Mafia Style until it was coming out, so...
Yeah. What was the other name for that, Brian? Do you know it's like the Exterminator or something?
Yeah.
The Exterminations.
That
what the
sounds
fuck was
familiar.
The name? Yeah, it had a different name on VHS over here, I think.
Huh.
I forget what it's called. It was something like that.
Well, anyway, it's been delayed again. And it was weird because Friday, everyone's like, no one's, you know, it comes out today. It was supposed to come out today. And on Friday, no one had gotten any emails about their pre-orders going out, like nothing. So people just start rumbling online. And Diabolik, they tweeted out and put on their Facebook, like, hey, you know what? It's delayed. We don't have a date yet, but for sure this thing's delayed. So everyone started going crazy, and you know, people get when their precious Blu-rays aren't going to come in. But Grindhouse released, like, they were like quiet the whole day long, like not even responding to anything. They were actually deleting negative tweets off of their Facebook.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But how do you delete tweets off Facebook?
Tweets, goddamn. It's, you know, I'm not finished with my first cup of coffee yet, so I'm going to fuck up, okay?
Coffee shop of whores.
here we go. Free plug. They're deleting negative posts on their Facebook, okay? And so basically what happened is the clear cases that they're using, they finally responded and put something out on Saturday. The clear cases, the Criterion style cases that they ordered were on back order. There were also, I guess there was like a labor strike or a union strike at like the docks, at receiving docks. Releasing. No, at the receiving docks, like, the West Coast receiving docks. So basically all that led to this being delayed. I believe the cases are on their way to the manufacturer this wow. week, and they should start getting created. It's a packaging problem. And the Beyond, so Massacre Mafia Style is going to come out March 10th, and then the Beyond is scheduled for March 24th because it has more complex packaging. Like what? Slipcover? Does it come with like a special slipcover or something?
Oh, God, I don't know.
That's why slipcovers are bullshit, people. Bullshit. So anyway, it's a packaging issue, and they finally responded. So I have to wait another month for those. So get your panties out of your asses, everyone. Just wait a little bit longer.
Panties out of your asses.
So that's it. That's my little thing about Grindhouse. So Brad.
I'm gonna make that a lot shorter than what you just did. In the UK, we have The Other by Eureka. 88 Films has released Slaughterhouse and Don't Go Into the Woods. I think Mother's Day has been delayed over there. And the last thing I heard is Don't Go Into the Woods was delayed as well.
Bro, those red cases.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out. Maybe it's a manufacturer. I heard there was a strike at the loading docks over in the UK. Arrow released The Haunted Palace. Three Wolves released a three-disc Hardware over in the UK. So you guys are welcome. I don't know. three-disc of Hardware.
Hey, like, Hardware's awesome, but yeah, three-disc is crazy.
Well, it's like I'm getting tired of this, like, five discs. And like three of them are DVDs.
Well, Severin's using their extras to wipe their asses and just throwing them out for so people can have them for free.
It's ridiculous. Like it's so weird though. Like, you know, the same thing happened. Like I got that Stray Cat Rock box set, and it's like, you know, seven discs, and like two of them are Blu-rays. The rest are fucking DVDs. Like why? Like I don't understand. Like. It's like they say seven discs so they can jack up the price.
Yeah, well, they do that with, like, when there was actually a disc for digital copy. Five discs. One's the actual DVD of the movie, and the other is a digital copy disc.
Yeah, it's so stupid. But anyways, today, New Year's Evil comes comes out, which is pretty exciting. It was always a favorite of mine growing up. Had the tape, had the DVD, so it'll be nice to hopefully see it HD. God Told Me To by Blue Underground, which I have not seen, oddly enough, but I'm excited to see that. Not a horror film, as I kind of read the back, which I was didn't know what the hell was going on. It seems like just a fucking crazy guy. And then non-horror, Whiplash comes out, mm-hmm. which, you know, took some awards. That's Blumhouse produced and got into the Oscars and shit with that. So I heard that is awesome. I haven't seen it either, so I'll be picking that up.
If you're a drummer, I hear it's just awesome. I got some friends who are drummers and they're all jacked
about. My drummer?
Yeah.
Speaking of music, we got some Phantom of the Opera.
Well, was there a couple more? Does the Black Sunday AIP version come out? Kino?
Oh, well, didn't Kino already release?
They released the regular version. This is the AIP version, the American
recut or whatever.
Yeah, it's it was what was sent to theaters in the U.S. You know, English dubbing and all that stuff. That's just weird to me that they would do two.
How does that appeal to anybody?
I don't know, and that's what I want to ask you guys. That's what I want to bring up and ask.
Maybe that's why I think I maybe read that, and that's why I didn't announce it.
Like, what's the appeal? Because I would rather have what the filmmakers intended.
Well, yeah, but some people like the original. Like, that's why when they put that, you know, certain DVDs out and they have the TV cut, the U.S. cut, the foreign cut, because people like, you know, they like the extra stuff, but sometimes they might want to watch the version that they saw as a kid. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of like I have that Dawn of the Dead box set.
Well, yeah, but it's a box set. It's all in one. You know, it's weird that there's two separate releases.
No, I agree. Maybe it was like a rights issue, but I'm saying even that Dawn of the Dead box set, you know, I prefer the European cut. But sometimes, like, when I watch it or watch it with somebody, I'll throw on the U.S. one. Yeah. I don't know. It's just – I mean, not that it's a preference, but I just think people like that, choice.
The movie Black Sabbath with Boris Karloff, they did that too. I think there's two separate releases. And the AIP version, you actually hear Boris Karloff's real voice. So that's why that one was kind of cool because – So I don't know. 10 Seconds to Hell. Did you mention that?
The fuck is that?
Kino Lorber Studio Classics.
Yes.
But it's isn't it like a World War II movie or something?
I don't know. Like I don't know. The cover has a skull on it.
Fucking say it.
The cover has a skull on it, so it looks like it looks like a horror movie.
Oh my God.
Jack Palance. But okay,
stay out
maybe
of
not.
The fucking Blu-ray announcements.
The cover has a freaking skull, half skull on it, so it looks like a.
So when
movie.
You go to the store and you see a skull on a T-shirt, is it a horror movie T-shirt?
Yes. Yeah. You're a metal band if you have a skull on a T-shirt. Don't you guys know skulls mean dark and metal?
Basically, it's a dark metal movie.
Yeah. It's the new Balance. Death metal.
Balance was known for his dark metal period.
All right, well, I guess not, okay? whatever. Screw you, Brad.
I, you're the one that brought it up. I just made a comment.
All right, I'll get out of your freaking Blu-ray announcements. Let's talk about some Phantom of the Opera.
Some stories have so great a power that with each new generation, they are reborn.
There's a feeling.
But it had to come from somewhere. This was no phantom. Ghosts do not skin their victims. This is the work of an artist.
We will make music that the world will love forever.
In sleep,
oh God,
he sang
here we go.
To me. In dreams he came.
Somebody commented, somebody said that they thought Brad singing was funny, and now he wants it every episode.
I don't do it every episode. I'm just saying, like, that's Phantom of the Opera. That's the Phantom of the Opera I know.
Yeah,
I'm fucking musical. I'm not into this fucking movie bullshit from the fucking 80s.
The only thing that I'm familiar with is the opera, the actual opera musical of it, which my wife actually saw and she really loves. She's partial to that. She loves the music. When I was in choir in college, and everyone, all the choir people loved listening to the actual Broadway recording, whatever. I wasn't that much of a nerd.
That was actually part of the reason I avoided, this is the first time I saw it, and part of the reason I avoided it was because of the choir and theater nerds in my high school. Not you, not to point fingers at you, Sean, because I was actually in choir in high school too. And I think that's how I saw people were wearing the T-shirts all the time. And it just was this thing where I was like, enough already. Yeah. I don't have any interest. You guys are idiots. And I just don't care about this stupid production of this, you know.
Yeah. It was either, so that's part of the reason I didn't see
it. Yeah. Well, actually, I don't even think I was in the Midwest, so I don't think they even knew what that was at the time.
I was in the Midwest too, so.
I don't know. Yeah, all the Wisconsin.
It was the edgy choir people. And then the only movie version I saw was the 2004 version with
oh wow, yeah,
that's the other thing. There's so many versions.
Gerard Butler,
oh,
which
wow.
was that. I mean, directed by Joel Schumacher.
Oh,
it's actually really good.
I thought it was boring.
Well, that's the thing is how do you fuck up this story? Because I mean, it is actually a decent story. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never read the original book that was published in fucking 1900, but you know, even the old film, I have that, and that's even entertaining. And we have, of course, the musical that Andrew Lloyd Webber did that mm-hmm. I've seen a couple times because my mom's obsessed with it. And, you know, that's good. And then actually the Gerard Butler movie, the Schumacher flick, that's actually pretty good, too. They all even this accomplishment because all the actors actually use their own voices to sing. And then we have this that I stayed away from mainly because – honestly, by the cover of this movie, it just looks like it's going to be medieval boring. And it is medieval boring.
Well, okay, so 1989's Phantom of the Opera, starring Robert Englund. This was supposed to be his kind of big break from Freddy Krueger. He was all excited to do this adaptation.
Well, they didn't do a very good job being, it says Robert Englund was Freddy.
Right.
Front.
So the marketing of the film, of course, yeah, this Robert Englund was Freddy and now he's the Phantom of the Opera. And of course it looks like Freddy underneath the mask in the cover. So, but I mean, apparently he was all about it. He was one of the hardest workers on the movie. His acting's okay.
How about his orgasm face when he kills the first guy?
So yeah, so for some reason, so this is directed by Dwight H. Little. Sorry, I forgot the H.
Also known as the fucking man. He's directed some good shit.
I know. I know. But this this stars Robert Englund, Bill Nighy, Jill Scholine, and Alex Hyde-White. But
Molly Shannon.
And Molly Shannon, holy shit, that was a surprise. So
yeah, that was cool.
They kind of decided to do a horror movie take on this. Let's do Phantom of the Opera without most of the music, and let's make it a horror movie. And where the Phantom basically, offs people so that our main character can do better or something. It is an odd flick, but I had a lot of fun with it.
So. Yeah, I didn't hate it or anything either. I think part of it for me was just low expectations and the mm-hmm. fact that it's got some Canon Films lineage to it because Menachem Golan's 21st Century Films made the movie and it definitely feels like a Canon Films I think that's part of the marketing thing. I mean, they're just horrors, those guys. So I mean, they want exploitative, they want to sell Freddy in England, they mm-hmm. want to get their money's worth and all. So and they also don't, for me, when they bring in a quote-unquote big legit actor like England, they don't dial him back. They don't ask him, they want him to go big. And so you're kind of either into that or not. And I thought it was okay. I think at the time this came out, I was burnt out on Freddy. So it was kind of interesting to see him do this Freddy-esque, but a little bit different, slightly more theatrical.
Freddy's not burnt.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
The thing is it's fucking Robert Englund, he's not that great of an actor. And, he has this, of course he plays Freddy Krueger, but people don't go to the movie because it's fucking Robert Englund. They go because it's Freddy. I mean, that's who he'll be and always be. And he's coming right off all the Nightmare on Elm Streets of this. Mm-hmm. I understand, he wants people to take him maybe seriously. But the point is that he's fucking playing Freddy. Still, everything about it, even his face and his mannerisms when he kills people, that's all you can see. There's no difference.
Well, I mean, his first major reveal, he gets blood just splattered all over his face.
And he fucking comes. He's coming. That's what it looks like. It's very, very weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was one of those things, if I saw it when I was younger, I might have dug it a little bit more, but this just, it just doesn't, this is not good.
I so this is one of those that I didn't really get into the Nightmare on Elm Street until I was a little older, because when I was a kid, I was just terrified of horror movies. And so when I was like 10 or 11, this is one of them I saw right up there with all the Nightmare on Elm Streets, you know. But then I always thought it was weird, because I knew even as a kid about Phantom of the Opera, and I'm like, I was just like, that's, I'd always wanted to see this, you know. So yeah, I finally saw it for the first time for all these years of anticipation. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's played as kind of a straight horror flick. I mean, he's and I can't remember, and I can't remember how the Angelo Lloyd Webber play goes. But does he in those, does he off like people, like stalk them and kill them in those plays in as well, or
in the play?
Yeah, I don't know if he does, but apparently the book is a lot darker than what we've seen.
He's known as they know about the Phantom at the actual playhouse, and all he does really is he scares the shit out of people in order to like make them quit, so that way she can move up.
Gotcha. In this,
and he trains her, right? Like, it's, you know, it's, I mean, it's definitely a darker version of course what it is, but I mean, it's like they make the Phantom be a slasher,
right? Instead of him scaring people,
I don't like.
He's offing them and taking their skin.
But he's not even scary.
He's not. He's still in Freddy mode.
It's just so bland, you know?
Yeah, well, he's still in Freddy mode. It's definitely not scary. It's gory, but it's not. He's over the top and theatrical, just like Freddy Krueger in those scenes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's forever Freddy because of that, you know? Yeah. Even like his little cameos and stuff today, I mean, they're putting him in there because he's fucking Freddy. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Poor Robert. He tried to really break out there.
He did. So I mentioned Bill Nighy is in this, and I really dig Bill Nighy, and he kind of classes it up in his scenes a little bit, you know. Because he's obviously acting on a whole other level than everyone else.
No, he's great. I was super psyched to see him.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah,
you know, and I mean, even Jill Scholine, she's good too. It just sucks that she's kind of stopped acting though.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you guys, what has she done?
I guess like lately? I mean, she was in Hot Moves. She was in The Curse 2. Stepfather, Cutting Class, which is like awesome. Popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Popcorn, you
know?
Yeah.
And then like she just stopped like in the 90s. I know she was like in the sequel to When a Stranger Calls, but like after that I don't really know if I saw too much of her again.
When a Stranger Calls back again. This is a third movie with that title. When a Stranger Calls Back Again. No, no.
So maybe she just became a mom. That's why I always say, like, whenever that happens, I'm just like, they probably became a mom.
You sexist son of a bitch.
No, I mean they have to deal. They have to deal with all that shit, you know. So it's
Hollywood's cruel. Once actresses, you know, have kids and stuff, Hollywood's pretty cruel when it comes to actresses, for sure.
Yeah.
They're the sexist sons of bitches.
That's right.
I guess. You say so.
Let's see. Who else? Not really anybody. Oh, and then Molly Shannon makes an appearance. Was this... Where was she? This was before her Saturday Night Live, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was just... I mean, because that's all I've ever known her as.
Well, I mean, she had... Like, she pops up in movies. Like, before this SNL days, but I mean, yeah, she was a legit actress before all that shit, you know, happened. I don't know how she got into, you know, SNL. I mean, she probably always, of course, liked comedy, but I mean, she was in, wasn't she in Lawnmower Man 2?
I don't think I saw Lawnmower Man 2.
But yeah, I mean, even before that, I mean, I guess I don't know.
If you look at IMDb, this looks like this was her first feature film.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's just when what year did fucking Lawnmower Man 2 come out? That came out in the 90s?
96. Yeah, you're totally right. She's in that. She plays homeless lady. I'm sure she's real proud of that one.
Homeless lady.
She plays homeless lady?
That's what's listed. I don't know.
That's her title character, is homeless lady. That's awesome. That's quite the accomplishment. Now I'm sure that was on her SNL.
I'm sure that got her. Lauren Michael saw that and was like, "That chick's funny. That homeless lady's funny, man."
That's funny.
You know what you did in Lawnmower Man 2 is
I remember her in that, but I didn't know that she was fucking homeless.
Homeless lady.
I need to watch Lawnmower Man 2 again.
I've never seen it.
You do. So the director, Dwight H. Little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His first film was Halloween 4, which is why Brad is basically dropped his pants and started fiercely masturbating when I said his name.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure his first movie wasn't Halloween 4, though. I'm just saying.
Oh, no, never mind. Well, that's the one that kind of put him on the map, apparently.
Wasn't he coming off Halloween 4 into this?
Yes. Yeah, this was his next thing, coming off of Halloween 4. And
he worked with fucking Robert on Freddy beforehand. With
Freddy's Nightmares.
With his fucking TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. I don't know how many episodes he directed, but...
This says just one, but...
Which one was it?
Do Dreams Bleed?
Oh. That pilot episode of fucking Freddy's Nightmares is fucking amazing.
I don't think I've seen that. I don't know if I've ever seen too many of those shows.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, it takes the whole backstory.
Oh yeah,
with the parents and everything. They like he's Robert. You know, he doesn't have the makeup on, and he goes, and he's like at his lair, and the parents come and like kill him.
Oh wow!
And it sets up everything for Freddy.
That's pretty cool. I was noticing Dwight H. Little went from Phantom of the Opera in '89 to Mark for Death with Seagal in '90 to Rapid Fire with
that's
Brandon
one of my
Lee.
Favorites.
Rapid Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good, dude. That's underrated right there. And then Free Willy 2.
Yeah. I forgot he did that. That's hilarious. he did something else too.
Murdered 1600.
Yeah. I know he like hit it big like with some theater flicks, and he directed one of the Anaconda movies. I remember that too.
Anacondas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen. God damn, I don't know if I've seen Anacondas.
I rented Anacondas.
Oh wait, I saw that
weekend.
In the fucking theater.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did too. I did too. Because I was working at Blockbuster at the time, and some DVD came out that had free tickets for Anacondas.
Yeah,
like that was the promotion, and I'm like, oh, "Fuck dude. Yeah, I'm gonna go see fuck some fucking snakes." That's and that funny. Movie sucks.
It's horrible.
But no, like, there's actually like one really fucking cool shot is an aerial shot when they're walking through the water, and from the distance you can see all the snakes surrounding them. That's about it.
The other thing I like about Anacondas is it's got a sub, you know, title to it, which is Anacondas: The Hunt for the Blood Orchid, which is like one
it's
of
like
my
a
favorite.
Flower?
Yeah, something. But I like that as like a sequel, you know, like Electric Boogaloo, kind of like,
yeah.
You know, The Hunt for the Blood Orchid. You know, I don't
blood
know.
Orchid.
I'm gonna use that.
Yeah, I saw Anacondas one weekend. My wife worked. She worked on the weekends before we had any kids or anything, and she worked at our apartment complex. And you can go down and just. They had movies for you to just borrow, and that I would always go down there on Saturday morning with her, and she would unlock and I'd look through all the movies, and that was there.
Somebody had Anacondas.
Yep. So
that's
awesome. I watched it while she was at work, and
nice.
But it sucked, but it was fun.
You know, Dwight Little also because I was recently started watching the From Dusk Till Dawn TV show.
Yeah.
And he's directed a few episodes on that, too, because I remember his name popping up. I don't know what episodes he directed, but I saw his name pop up a couple times. But yeah, he's still pretty active. Yeah. I think he does TV now.
Yeah,
but.
Sleepy Hollow, Bones. Yeah, totally, man.
Unfortunately, the last
Bones?
Movie...
Shit. That's what
he's listed, for several episodes of Bones, it looks like.
Damn.
Unfortunately, the last movie he did was Tekken.
Oh, poor Dwight.
Poor guy.
That movie went through so much shit, I remember. And then I just remember, like, one day at the theater, and I'm like, fucking Tekken? I was like, there's a Tekken movie? Yeah, I know. I remember that being talked about forever. And I was like, oh my God, one please, you know? Went by myself, and I went out like, I don't know if that's a Tekken movie. it is, they have the same names, and there's a little bit of fighting.
Right.
But, you know, that was a weird time.
Yeah.
I mean, but fucking Gary Daniels, like, he was actually in that movie, and that was the weird part, because that's a guy that has tried to do so well and be the biggest action star possible and has been acting since the fucking 80s and still cannot make it. Like, it's the most bizarre thing. Like, he has been in probably over 100 fucking action movies. And I remember he had a little bit part in The Expendables, but that's about it, you know? And I was like, you guys don't know who Gary Daniels is?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, oh, dude. Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking him up. I mean, he's like hardworking man, like 4 or 5 movies a year. Kind
yeah,
of.
And yeah. He actually is like a pretty good action guy, but he just never hit that note where he was like, you know, like a box office draw or became one of, you know, it was like fucking Patrick Swayze's brother. Like when he
Don Swayze.
Yeah. When he tried to make it into, you know, action movies, and then like Chuck Norris's cousin or whatever that he tried to do it. You know, it's funny because there's a really, really, really fucking good movie, that they actually are all in, and it's fucking what's it? Billy Drago's in it.
The Delta Force One?
No.
Mike
no,
Morris,
no.
Gary Daniels.
Not Fist.
No. It's it's called Death Ring. Oh. And yeah, Mike Norris. My phone just vibrated. I meant to take that off. But yeah, Mike Norris is in it. Like Steve McQueen's son, Don Swayze, and it's actually a really, really good movie. It's that all these people are like all like efficient killers, like army guys, and they're put into this game where they actually pick a cue ball, and the number that's on the cue ball is the weapon they get, and they only get one weapon, and they get a bag of $1 million, and only one person can walk out. So you can kill the other people with their bag or work together, because you also have hunters coming after you. And if the hunters kill you, they get the bags. And there's like $10 million. It's like a $10 million game towards the end. And it's out in the forest. It's really fucking good. And it never got any play, but it was like all those guys like were thrown in, like all like the sub guys, like Chad McQueen was his name. I think it's
yeah,
Steve
yeah.
McQueen's son.
Yeah. The guy from Karate Kid.
Oh shit. Yeah.
He's one of the Cobra guys.
Oh my God. Yeah. You're right. I didn't even thought about that, but yeah, you know how. It's
I gotta see this movie, Brad. Whatever Death Ring you say it's called.
Oh yeah, it's so fucking good. It's on DVD for sure.
Okay, I'm totally.
But yeah, it's like a really fucking good action movie. But it was like one of those action movies that really never made it. And that's what I kind of like. I talk a lot about horror, but when I grew up, I was really into those action flicks. You know, like really, really low budget. You know, and like kind of like everybody's family members, then they tried to play off the success of like Chuck, you know, like Chuck Norris and stuff like that, and they all started doing shit. And that's how I came across Gary Daniels, because he was straight like direct to video action actor. So it was bizarre. That was a fucking derailment. Jesus Christ. Wow. I just got to mention, like, if I were
are
to
you
tell
sure
me
he's
I was
in this
gonna,
movie I can't find him.
Gary Daniels is not in Death Ring.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just talking. Yeah,
wow, you
just,
went way off.
Yeah. If you told me that we're going to be talking about Phantom of the Opera and I'm going to get to fucking Gary Daniels and talking about Death Ring, I would have said you're full of shit. But it happened.
Well, that was awesome. That movie's on my radar now for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm totally going to check this out.
Yeah, it's really good. Is it on? Is it cheap on Amazon?
Who knows? I'm not on Amazon.
You need to post that shit on the link for people to buy it.
Let's see if it's on Amazon, people. It is on DVD. Only one left in stock, $24.98.
Yeah, but you can buy it used though. There's that's
for $12.81. Oh no, here we go. $1.48.
Yeah, $1.48 and stuff.
Boom.
Yeah.
In cart.
Yeah, no, it's really fucking good. But
all right.
It's like we're all silent because everybody's buying it now. Is that what just happened?
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right, back to Phantom of the Opera. So,
man, I should be a fucking salesman. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude.
Hey, you guys, set it up pretty well, man. I have this stuff that you can buy on my site. That's awesome.
Oh man. So. Anyway, back to the Zisk. Scream Factory did a pretty good job bringing Phantom of the Opera to the Blu-ray.
I think great job to bring the DVD, yeah.
The Blu-ray, jackass.
Oh,
I mean they could have just thrown this on Blu-ray and been done with it, but there's
that's what they
no, it's the 30-minute documentary, and then they Dwight H. Little and Robert Englund to do an audio commentary.
It was good. I actually like the extras pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty stacked.
You know, for what it was.
I didn't get
no.
To the commentary.
I thought you meant like what it looked like. I mean, it was just a fucking 720p. It was like this whole movie is fucking dark.
Yeah,
so
I mean, you know,
you could see like all the fucking like it's just blurry. Like the black should be jet black, and it's not.
I thought it looked okay. I used my new 40-inch Samsung.
Oh my God.
You know. TV that I got
and, my 40-inch.
It wasn't on the 60-inch in the other room, but you know, it looked okay.
I mean, like, it looks okay. Yeah,
I mean, there's freaking grain for days. I thought
but
it looked.
That's the thing. It looked like the fucking MGM, like fucking probably shit that they did like back in the day for DVD or HD transfer. Like, it's not very good.
It looks okay. I mean, for what it is, like. I guess for me, if like for older movies, I don't really as long as there's no like crazy digital enhancement and like pixelation and stuff, I'm fine. And for me, it looked all right. I mean, whenever I paused it, I noticed like I was like, whoa, you know, that's not a crystal clear picture.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but for what it is, I wasn't looking too bad. It sounded pretty decent. What is it, a stereo mix? Decent. I don't know.
Nothing was stereo. Coming out of my subwoofer. That's for sure.
Really? Well, and it was kind of like a low rumble, like the whole movie. But for what it is, man, you know, it's all right. It's all right. If I think for me, like, this is one of those movies that I'm glad there's extras on it, and I'm glad we get to hear like the director and Robert Englund talk about the movie, and it's you know the 30-minute little retrospective documentary, and there's some other interviews on there. It makes it worth it because this is kind of
really wanted to know it. I really wanted to watch the documentary, but I just like I didn't want to hear him talk about a movie I didn't like.
Sometimes that makes a movie you don't like better. I'm just saying.
Did they interview Jill?
Yeah, she's in there.
Yep.
What's she look like these days? She's still cute.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, I thought she looked pretty good.
She's like the poor man's like Phoebe Cates. You know. And she's like the poor man's like Danica McKellar. Like if Danica McKellar,
she's wow. cuter than Danica McKellar, I think.
Huh?
I think she's cuter than Danica.
Have you seen pictures of Danica McKellar
recently?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have.
Oh my God, dude, look it up.
Please pause everyone as we look up.
Jesus Christ. Have you haven't seen fucking Dana oh shit. She did fucking a spread for Maxim.
Yeah, she
and I
good.
Saw her and I was like,
all right, I take Winnie? It back, dude. I take it back.
Winnie?
Yeah, like, no, she does look a hell of a lot better.
Wow. Anyways, I know. If Danica McKellar and Phoebe Cates and one of them had a penis and they made
whoa,
a baby.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
It would be Jill Schilling for sure.
Okay, I need to make sure I clear my browser history. There's pictures of Danica McKellar in a lingerie.
Your wife's gonna
my wife walks in right now. This would look really awkward.
While you're talking to two dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks all right.
She looks pretty good. All right. Anyway, what I'm saying is, I think the special features add to this, and I dig it. I mean, I'm glad. I'll revisit this every now and then just because it's such a kind of a weird oddity, and I had fun with it. For me, it's the favorite. It's my favorite Phantom of the Opera. I mean, other than, you know, Phantom of the Paradise, which is on a whole other level.
Yeah, that's
it's, you know, it's fun, and the fact that they go gory and everything, just, you know, just adds a little flavor to it, and I'm fine with it. But we gotta move along, gentlemen.
I'm okay with like moving past it, unless you want to talk Dwight H. Little's rapid fire.
That's okay. It's all right. Let's move into Jake Gyllenhaal in a performance that freaking blew me away with Nightcrawler.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
No, I'm not hiring.
We're first! Go around, get a shot inside the car! Hey, back away.
I got it, I'm back.
Will this be on television?
Morning news, if it bleeds, it leads.
Are you currently hiring?
I'm starting a TV news business.
You, get back!
I film breaking stories. Maybe you saw my item this morning, you were fatal carjacking.
No, I mean, I don't have a TV.
Do you have a cell phone?
Yeah.
Does that have GPS?
Yeah.
Congratulations, you're hired.
Okay. We're taking the next right.
Good, stupid!
Repeat the police. I will never ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. Excuse me. I have something you'll be very excited about.
You have a good eye. I want you to contact me when you have something.
Something like this.
Think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.
You will be seeing me again.
In a unit, residential 211.
A home invasion.
So, yes. Guy, oh my gosh, guys. Freaking Nightcrawler. I mean, this movie kind of came out of nowhere for me. I mean, I kind of all of a sudden people started seeing it and kind of hearing some buzz, and I avoided like any trailer. I avoided reading anything. I avoided any reviews, and I went into this movie like completely fresh. And like the standout for me was friggin' Jake Gyllenhaal. I mean, his acting, the character he played, it reminded me of when I first saw American Psycho, when I was like, whoa, that was like when I saw Christian Bale playing, whatever the heck that guy's name is. And,
Patrick Bateman
and his performance kind of blew me away. And that was like kind of put Christian Bale, I guess, on another level for me. He's since gone downhill for me, but that's what Jake Gyllenhaal reminded me of here in Nightcrawler. He's just this, I don't know. He's a freaking monster, you know, like in this film, but also the nicest guy possible, if that makes any sense.
I don't know. I think it's actually, I don't know if you would say he was a monster. I think he does a great job of, you know, just developing as somebody that's kind of timid, but has that ability to manipulate.
Right.
And then once he realizes how to do it, and he's one of those guys that he can go in blind to anything and be okay, but he makes himself be the best.
Right.
Like in any situation that this character, what was his name? Lou something?
Lou Bloom.
Yeah. Anything that Lou wants to do, he'll do it and become really. That's how I got that character, and I think that's one of the things is even just with the script alone, just like the development of that character and what he becomes. Mm-hmm. Like he becomes scary at times, and it's funny because it feels like it's going to get to like a horror like level, but it never does.
Right,
and. I don't know. It's such like it almost feels like a genre mashup to me. I saw this at theaters at Fantastic Fest, and this was the closing night film.
Wow.
For Fantastic Fest, and I was like, "Fucking Nightcrawler! Like, really? Like, you know, why would this be closing? Because last year, I think it was, or the year before, it was the remake of Red Dawn, and it was fucking terrible. So, like, you know, I was like, all right, whatever. You know, no, it's playing all screens. There's nothing really else you can do. I'll, you know, go check it out. And I just, like, it, when it started happening, I was like, this is, you know, it's really well written. I basically, when I came out, I said, if the Coen brothers wrote a movie and wrote the script, and who's the guy that directed Training Day?
Antoine Fuqua?
No, it wasn't Training Day then. No, he directed Street Kings.
Oh, good question.
Antoine Fuqua? I don't know.
No, Avery.
Oh.
What's his fucking name?
Damn it. David Ayer.
Yeah, David Ayer.
Directed Fury.
Yeah, David Ayers. Like, if David Ayers directed this, that the Coen brothers, that's what it felt like. It felt, and also, like, kind of felt like a cop drama at times.
It's a Michael Mann-ish.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. That's a good one. That's a really good one. Yeah, totally like a Michael Mann feel. Mm-hmm. That's a good one, Sean. But anyways, like, you know, this is his debut, this director, Dan Gilroy, who wrote the film, who has been in, like, Hollywood for a while writing, you know, he, like, wrote Free Jack, which is great, and Chasers, which I love. Directed by Jenna Topper, by the way, which is bizarre. But, you know, he just has a really, really good, like, niche for characterization, even in everything that he's written before. But he did a hell of a good job on this movie, man. Yeah. And so did Jake. Like, he takes that role and just, like, makes it. It's so crazy, like, how good this movie is. And it didn't get a lot of, you know, a lot of play.
Right, that's weird. Like, so the
and
setup,
open on Halloween too. Yeah, that was weird, the crazy thing. Weird night.
So the basic plot is Lou Bloom. He's basically kind of a common thief. He's stealing, like, metal and things like that, and trying to sell them into scrap places for money. And that's pretty much what he's doing. And but he gets into crime journalism, kind of freelance journalism, where, you know, they have to be, like, first at the scene. And yeah. With a camera, and you sell that to the news agencies, which I think happens a lot in LA. I don't really watch much news anymore, but it makes sense. You know, LA is such a crazy town, and you always see, you know, amateur video of police chases and things like that. And he's kind of a, I don't know what's the term, megalomaniac? Is that a term?
Yeah.
He, like you said, Brad, he wants to be the best at what he does, and he'll kind of do whatever it takes to get where he wants, but he's a very unassuming kind of personality, and that's basically the plot. It's all I need to know. And
yeah.
So Brian, when did you first see this, and what are your thoughts on it?
I had heard about it, like you guys, you know, since late last year, and I was slightly skeptical because, I don't know, sometimes when you hear about a great performance, then you go and see the movie, you're like, well, that's all the movie has, is that. And this was different. I felt like, you know, he does, God, just what he does with his eyes.
Yeah.
His eyes are wide the whole time, and it's part of the character. He's just, he's one of the most, like,
it feels
creepy.
Like, he's a sponge with those eyes. Like, he's just, every time someone talks to him, he just takes all the information and, like, consumes it and uses it.
Yeah, man. Like, he's taking energy. Yeah, no, it's cool. Yeah, I mean, he's such one of the more compelling and creepy sociopaths you ever have seen in a movie. Like, it's so funny you guys mentioned, you know, Michael Mann and some other stuff, and I totally agree. It was things I hadn't even thought about, but I kept thinking of, you know, Rupert Pupkin and Travis Bickle.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, like, Travis Bickle, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah.
But totally Rupert Pupkin too. Yeah. Like, he's the way that he goes to the TV station and presents himself in the sort of deluded, like, you know, out of touch, disconnected mental place that he's coming from is very much like a Rupert Pupkin kind of thing. But yeah, it's I don't know, man. It definitely it's very memorable, and that performance, like, Gyllenhaal is a guy that I've been a fan of for a long time, but it's really neat to see somebody take something like this and just totally knock your socks off. You know, I mean, yeah.
No, I've always enjoyed it. Like, you know, he's always been I consider him a really great actor, But this was the first time, like, I mean, he has this and Enemy back to back.
I still need to see that.
It's on my list to see.
And it's just like, Jesus Christ, dude. Like, we're like, I mean, he's always been great. No, don't get me wrong. Like, I've always enjoyed him, but like, he's just fucking knocking it straight out of the fucking park. And it's, and it sucks because these movies aren't big, you know, they aren't, you know, talked about that much. And I guess that's why we're talking about it on the show. It's because everything else that he's done, like, he's been on the poster and, right, you know, you see trailers for it all the time. And I just didn't really see too much promotion for this film. It did well for what it was worth. And, you know, people seem to like, people like it once they see it, but it just seemed like it really got, and the same thing with Enemy, like, it just wasn't getting out there, mm-hmm, you know, like, people just weren't watching it. And so I'm hoping that he does find his audience very, very quickly with this stuff. And I think he will, because I think a great performance goes a long way.
Yeah. I think this is one of those movies that will sit like it, kind of a simmer, you know what I mean? It's gonna take a few years for people to really start catching on, you know. It's one of those, yeah, like, people start catching it later on, and oh, Nightcrawler, is that movie, you know, and then they'll start watching it. So what did you think of the supporting cast? It's great to see Rene Russo back.
She's fantastic. I mean, Bill Paxton, yeah, and Rene Russo, man, they just like bring it to another level, like, just fill in the background in, uh-huh, a way that makes the movie that much better.
Yeah, no, I think, like, just Bill Paxton alone, he's such a really, like, good, like, grimy character. Like, he's great at playing that, and he nails it. He really does. He does a great job.
I love that guy, man. He's been one of my favorite character actors forever, and I love to see him continue to pop up and people continue to realize how useful he can be in, yeah, like, elevating your movie.
Oh yeah. He's great, and he's not front and center, you know what I mean, throughout the movie. He's a background character, you know. When you first see him,
yeah,
he kind of rushes by and he's doing his thing, and you know, and he doesn't have, like, sometimes these character actors will have, like, the scene where he doesn't really have that, but he's there just enough for you to get it. He introduces you to this world of amateur this amateur crime video or whatever, and he's there just enough to kind of push Lou Bloom's character into the next level as kind of competition. And it's great. And then Rene Russo, you know, how she handles, like, Lou Bloom as they start working together, that work relationship, as he kind of, you know, tries pushing the limits of the work relationship. And there's a scene between Jake Gyllenhaal and her out to dinner.
That's an amazing scene.
A lot of subtle stuff going on between the two, and you know, it's just, I think I haven't been, the very few movies seem to surprise me anymore, especially you're wondering where, and not necessarily where the plot's going to go, but what are these characters going to do? And I think that all the characters, the three, I guess, heavy hitters in the film.
Don't forget his partner Rick. That kid played a good role.
He's almost like so good he kind of blends in the background. You know what I mean? Like he didn't really push anything over the edge for me. But that's just me.
I'm with you, Brad. I like that guy.
I think he was a great little supporting thing. Like, because you got, like, the reason why I liked it so much and him alone is because we have Lou, Jake Gyllenhaal's character, who is very, like I said, he's very timid, but he has that ability to manipulate. And when, mm-hmm, he really gets good, he knows exactly what it is. Then he has, like, this, you know, this guy come in. Rick comes in. He doesn't know anything. But the way that Lou speaks, it feels like he's been in that job for 30 years. He knows, yeah, the ins and outs, but he doesn't know shit still. But he sells it so well. For him to watch him manipulate, and then like him, like this, what was it, Rick? Rick just adapt and like become like almost part of him. But he's still like Rick? He's like a normal person. Huh? I thought his name was Rick.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right. I'm going to look. But yeah, Brad, that character is kind of essential to showing just how sort of out there that Gyllenhaal's character is, because you're like, well, and the insecurities of the character, like he wants to impress Rick, like at the same time as mentor him, he wants him to be like in awe of him, you know? And I'm just like, really, this guy that you found from like some Craigslist ad is the dude that you want to impress, you know? And that guy is really like, he's just really good. Like he's kind of shady and you know, you don't know what his deal is or if you can trust him. And yet, you know, Lou Bloom still like really wants him to be his ward, you know?
Yeah.
His,
that's the thing. He could have anybody, but yeah. It's like when he gets that guy, like he wants to keep him no matter what. And I just thought that was a great, like, you know, it seems like traditional Hollywood, in order to get more actors and more people to put on a poster, they would have him drop out and then bring somebody else in and then have like one scene with somebody new and then something happens and then they run. And it's like, ha 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 ha, he's going through all these people. But no, he gets that one guy and he sticks with him the entire time.
I was surprised that guy stuck around so long.
That's the great part though.
Yeah. The actor's name is Riz Ahmed. And he was in Four Lions.
Yeah, he plays Omar in Four Lions. When I watched it, I was like, oh, shit.
Okay.
You know, but that's the only thing I really recognize. I mean, I imagine he's been in other stuff, but as memorable, like, Four Lions, all those characters are fucking memorable.
I don't mean to say, like, he as an actor, he sucked. You know what I mean? I think his character definitely has his purpose. I personally didn't connect with the character for some reason, but he's there. I can see why he's there, and I appreciate it. And without that character, and I think it's a testament to the actor. I think he kind of plays just an everyday type of guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's definitely supposed to be our partially our surrogate. You know, our window in.
Some of the shit that they go through, I would have been out like the next day. Like I'm done.
Well, I think that's part of the reason he sticks with it is that guy. I mean, he gets caught up in it.
He kind of has nowhere to go, though.
Yeah, he has nowhere to go, exactly. And that's part of the reason. And Gyllenhaal doesn't see it like that. He just doesn't see it as that guy. He sees it as an opportunity for somebody to mentor.
Well, he kind of manipulates, though, because he's like, you have nowhere to go. You don't have very much money. And I'm going to keep stringing you along with itty bitty prompt, little crumbs. I'm gonna leave a crumb trail for you.
That's what I'm saying. Like, no matter who Lou comes in contact with, he owns them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like really like well done and bizarre because you just don't see that. You know, you don't see that in movies. You see so much of Hollywood try to like use as many people as they can. It was just weird that he stuck with that character when there was like you could have him like I guess. Looking at it as a screenwriting perspective is using that to really show Lou's character is to have him encounter different people.
Mm-hmm.
You think that mostly traditionally that's how people would go is just to show how many people we can drive away because of how he is.
Yeah. There would have been a montage
like
in a Hollywood
want
film.
You want to be with him for some reason. Mm-hmm. He's a villain in a way and he's a likable villain. Like you want to see Lou succeed. If he has to kill somebody in order to get something, you'll see that. Like, I mean, he's videotaping terrible, terrible things, but you're like, yeah, I want to see more carnage and see what he does. And it's just not too many actors and not too many screenwriters can create a character like that and hold on to it and be successful.
Well, I think there's a tendency to go over the top with these types of characters and Dan Gilroy.
It would be very easy to do it.
And there's one scene where I thought it was going to happen. But I think Dan Gilroy, as a director and writer, operates in restraint. And this was an independent film, right? Because there's no studio meddling in this. It seems like they had tight control over their craft here.
Whenever they were at Fantastic Fest and they were talking, the way that they were presenting it made it seem that they actually had a lot of room to do what they do.
Yeah, and then that's great. Like, the restraint in this movie really helps sell the character and everything that they're going through, because this is easy. You know, even we're talking Taxi Driver, like, even that goes places. It gets a little over the top near the end. But I think there's restraint that holds that movie together and has made Taxi Driver a classic, and that character so memorable, you know? And same thing here, man. This is a good double feature for, like, with Taxi Driver and like, you know, I'm having
I believe so too.
And good old Rupert Pumpkin.
Yeah, man.
You know, I think, you know, with what you said, I think because of who was behind this movie and, like, how deep the Gilroy family's, like, because, I mean, his brother produced it, and Tony Gilroy has, you know, produced some big shit, you mm-hmm. know, some big yeah. Hollywood movies. And that's
and written and directed,
is.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
Tony's great.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, totally. But it's, like, it seems that they, working together as a family, even, like, you know, because I think Dan Gilroy is married to Rene Russo, if I'm not mistaken. But anyways, like, it's just, it was such a close-knit production. Like, it was an independent film, but it had so many Hollywood aspects. You know, like, it, I understand what you're saying. Like, it felt like an independent film, but, like, if Hollywood is kind of funny to say that if Hollywood made an independent film in a way, you know, but anyways.
Yeah. I mean, well, it just, I don't know. It was all around. Like, I absolutely loved the film.
Yeah.
And, I think I would highly recommend it to anyone. And it's one of those, like, it kind of skirts the line of horror. And,
yeah, I was just going to say,
thriller.
It's appropriate to talk about on the show because I feel like there are horrific things about it.
Yeah, there's elements in there, but I think that they're smart. That's why I say the restraint is smart on here, because you don't have to be a horror fan to appreciate this movie. Like, I can probably show this movie to my wife and she would appreciate it for what it is. You know what I mean? Because it doesn't go, like, you know, like Phantom of the Opera, right? That goes into horror territory, where the story doesn't necessarily have to go there. It goes there. Nightcrawler, the same, kind of the same way. You know, it could have gone there, and it could have gone, it's dark, but it could have gone really dark. It doesn't go there, and I think that was a smart move on the writing aspect of it, because it's, I feel like this is a movie that's gonna, over time, you know, kind of catch more people's attention and, I think this is a movie we're going to be talking about for quite a while. And I feel like...
Well, that would be a really boring podcast, though.
So. Well, you know, you bring it up. And I feel like this is a movie I'm going to be introducing to people for quite a while. I guess would make more sense. But,
Yeah. No. I mean, it's definitely this generation's Taxi Driver. But yeah, I mean, it's there were moments when I was watching it. There's a couple... I don't want to give too much away. There's a couple sequences. There's a chase or two where I actually was, some things happened and I was out loud to myself. I was like, oh my God, you know, like I just was like, cause there's some really intense stuff. Like they do the sort of found footage, sort of you in the moment with them, in this great way, because the characters are, you know, they're in the thick of the shit. I mean, they're in the thick of like this, some really crazy stuff. And it brings you into the movie in this way that's similar to the rush you get from watching a horror movie, I think.
Yeah.
And it's hard to not see Jake Gyllenhaal as a monster on some level, you know? I mean, he really is kind of, he's a magnanimous, you know, charismatic monster, mm-hmm. but he still kind of is a monster. So there's a lot of ties to horror that I think the horror fans that are trying to branch out a little bit, I think will really appreciate. I can't wait for this to show up on Netflix Instant, because I think that's what's going to do it, is it'll show up on Netflix Instant and people start watching it and talking about it, and that'll break it through.
Totally. Cool. As far as the disc goes, though, did you guys watch any of the special features on this?
No, I don't own it yet.
Okay,
yeah. I saw it at Fantastic Fest.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it was pretty close to being one of my favorite of the year, but like, you know, but it's definitely, man, it's something to see. That's
if,
for sure.
If you're a film buff and you enjoy hearing behind the scenes stuff, the commentary has Dan Gilroy with Tony Gilroy, and then the editor, John Gilroy.
Oh, wow.
The three Gilroy brothers. I'm assuming they're brothers. all together talking about making a movie.
Big family in Hollywood.
Yeah, so that would, I mean, I'm assuming that's going to be very interesting. There's also a documentary, but I'm not sure how long it is. It's Making Nightcrawler. I'm hoping it's feature length or at least 30 minutes, but with these, you never know. I haven't seen it yet, so. But there's a little bit of meat on the bone here if you pick up the Blu-ray. So.
Yes.
Which I think this comes more highly recommended than Phantom of the Opera. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Watching paint dry
is, oh, man.
Is more recommended.
All right, gentlemen. We need to start wrapping up soon, but we wanted to introduce Brad. This was Brad's idea on doing.
Don't tell people that, then they automatically week. Hate it.
No, man, I think you have some good ideas. I think it's, you know.
Some?
Yeah. You have a few.
Oh, that's nice.
But you know, I like this idea because we cover so many movies just trying to get to like each week we're trying to keep with newer things that you guys can check out, but a lot of times things kind of fall through the cracks, and this is our chance to kind of recommend a Blu-ray each week. Or a movie that we've kind of passed over. So, Brad, since this is your idea, I'm going to let you start.
No, you're going first. I just want to
hear. I don't care. I can go first. I don't give a crap.
Do it.
Jesus. You're serious. Okay. All right. Well, my pick, this came out probably a few months back. But I finally watched it and I really dug it. It's Ragnarok. It's a Swedish film.
Norwegian.
Directed by Mikkel Sandemos.
But you're so good with names sometimes.
This is right up my alley. It's like a PG-13 kind of adventure, like an archaeological type thing with a monster involved. There's kids and everything. It reminds me of, like, you know, Jurassic Park or kind of early Spielberg, which I really appreciated. And like there's an Indiana Jones vibe to it. But you know, it's a lower budget, but I think they do a good job with the monster. And
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
totally.
It's basically an archaeologist finds some Viking. Some Viking runes or something. I'm horrible with the terminology, but basically goes out with his family, with his kids and his girlfriend to search it out, and shit goes down.
That's on Netflix Instant, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Nice. But I like it. I mean, these are the types of movies that I will kind of break out and show the kids. And I'm glad that it's there.
It's a great family movie. It really is.
I'm torn on this because I like watching things in their original language, you know. So it's one of those, like, I can maybe it's a litmus test. I can see if my kids will stick with a subtitled movie, which I think my daughter will. She's older, but you know, this is one that I can't wait to watch with them. And it definitely goes along like the early Spielberg type of adventure film. It doesn't. It's kind of kid friendly or young, you know, like not younger kids, but it's kid friendly, but without like talking down to kids, which a lot of modern, I think, movies with kids in them kind of are just dumb. Like they don't. I don't know. Like the kids act like they act their age. They act like normal kids, and they don't try to, you know, dummy things down to kind of make things family friendly, if that makes any sense. You know, it's kind of a weird line.
It's a weird balance, because I know what you mean, but I mean, as soon as it's one of those things that the only problem with the movie that I had is that once they set up the story and you kind of know what they're going to face, once the kids tag along, you're like, oh, this is PG-13.
You know? Yeah.
All right, here we go. Yeah. This is a family movie. But it's still good. It doesn't ruin anything. And the special effects are really, really well done with the monster.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely something to see. It's weird because I know that director, he was coming off Cold Prey 3 right after he did the third Cold Prey movie. Then he does a family movie next.
Cool.
I thought that was a weird balance, but...
I think I love it when directors kind of change things up like that. But like I said, like that makes sense though. He comes off a horror movie and then he does this. Like he's not like, oh, I'm gonna make a, like, it's not like The Rock in a family movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there is like a level of tension, and he treats the moment for what it is, you know, and that's why I love, like, you know, when Spielberg would do that, like, you know, Jurassic Park, man, like, there's scenes of that are just horrific. And then I'm like, and I let my kids watch it, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right, cool. Well, that's my pick.
Sweet.
Who wants to go? Brad, who should go next? I'm going to let you dictate who should go next.
I'm going to pick Brian.
Okay. So I'm not trying to cheat here. I have one that's on Blu-ray and one that's not, and that I'd like to be on.
It's all good, man.
Okay. So we talked about, and the one we've already kind of talked about, King Comedy, was my Blu-ray pick because I just felt like it tied into Nightcrawler. And yeah. I feel like if people haven't seen King Comedy, obviously it's a big movie to me. So I couldn't miss the opportunity to say, go watch King Comedy, because I mean, it's one of De Niro's greatest roles. And if you, it's a really neat thing to watch it up against mm-hmm. what Jake Gyllenhaal is doing in Nightcrawler. I think you watch the two of them and you'll see a certain kinship between these two totally sociopathic, you know, King Comedy has a little bit more humor to it, but there's definitely a lot of dark, depressing.
My wife, like, we had a half hour left and she goes, can you finish this movie for me and see how it ends? Cause she's like this, cause you think it could go fucking dark.
Yeah.
And it could. There's a moment where you don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
So I finished it. She went to bed and I finished it. And then the next day I was like, yeah, this will, you'll get a kick out of it. So we finished it together finally, but.
And she liked it, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
But at first, man, she was just like, God, I don't know. Like, cause you can definitely see it going, you know, a totally different direction.
Yeah. I mean, just real briefly, the plot for people that don't know is that, you know, De Niro plays sort of a losery guy who lives with his mom, who sort of plays at being a stand-up comic, who is sort of an autograph hound, but sees himself as above all that. And he becomes sort of entangled with Jerry Lewis, who plays basically like a Johnny Carson kind of talk show host. And, you know, there's a point where the beginning of the movie, he sort of fights off a crowd that's almost attacking Jerry Lewis's character outside his limo, and he gets in the limo with him. And then he starts talking to him and he thinks that they've sort of developed a relationship based on that. And it kind of goes from there. But anyway, that's a great movie. I love it. Go see it.
Yeah.
This is the one that I think is interesting and sort of ties into both movies that we talked about in a weird way is, Fade to Black. And that's Yeah. Now this one is a bummer. It stars Dennis Christopher. And Anchor Bay put out the DVD years ago, but it's out of print and expensive. And this is one that I think is prime for what's probably going to end up being an import Blu-ray release, because I don't know if there's rights issues that are holding it up. Because I don't know why it hasn't. Oh, do you know?
When we had Justin Beam on the show, he mentioned that company that owned the COD people that own that one. What's the name of that fucking company? But they own like Hell Knight, they own Fade to Black. Oh. And they had those Anchor Bay releases, but ever since then I think they bought them up.
Hmm.
And I know Blood Beach is on there with them.
Oh, man.
They own a lot of shit. And I think that's one thing that numerous companies have said. I know Scream has replied to that. They're just like, there's just no way.
Oh.
You know. So I don't know. I'm hoping we can, man. It even has a novelization.
I think I have it too, actually. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I have it. But I mean, but it's a really neat movie. It's basically like Dennis Christopher, who was in Breaking Away, which is one of my favorite movies. He plays like a lonely film geek dude who is really out of touch. He's kind of like a little bit like a Travis Bickley kind of guy too.
Yeah, no, totally.
And he there's some people that are harassing him, and he sort of takes his revenge on them, but he's also obsessed with this Marilyn Monroe chick that he thinks looks like Marilyn Monroe. So it's a really, but that's much more of a horror movie and maybe more fitting to the cast is Fade to Black. But like I said, it's a little hard to see right now, which is a bummer, but I'm hoping that maybe those rights issues that they're experiencing in the States, somehow they seem to get around them outside the States occasionally. So
yeah, I'm hoping this is something that I've always wanted to see that. I mean, cause I own that, you know, it was really cool. Anchor Bay did those drive-in packs where they put two movies together, and Fade to Black and Hell Knight is in the same pack.
That's awesome.
But Fade to Black is like super long out of print.
Yeah.
Like it's fucking costly to get a DVD of that.
You can get the double pack for $23.95.
Oh, that's not bad. Does it still have the, I think it had some extras on it too, like a commentary or something. Maybe,
I don't think that one does. I think the single release does.
Mm. Oh, the single release is freaking batshit expensive.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the difference.
Okay.
Because Hell Knight is also, I think, long out of print too. Unless it had a single DVD release, it might have. Because they all did later on. But you know, Hell Knight's a good movie too.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that's a great double feature. I mean, just two great horror movies that I think are underrated. But anyway, that not to get too far off on something people can't easily get. But I guess $23 isn't too bad, especially for two good movies. But yeah, that was another one that I thought of when I was thinking like Phantom of the Opera and Nightcrawler. Is there any way to connect those two? And it's a tenuous connection, but it's still a cool.
It's just my idea, and you took it and you made it your own, and you made it better. So I'm taking my pick back.
Come on!
All right, show's over. See you guys later. No, it was one thing I wanted to hit because I know a lot of. Digging up the Marrow is really, really getting out there. Is, you know, Adam Green's new movie. It's getting a lot of play. It's doing this little limited run. And it's going to be on like VOD soon. So just something to hit out. Everybody knows the Hatchet movies. No, they did Frozen, but he has a TV show that, he writes and directs with, along with, Joe Lynch, who did, you know, Wrong Turn 2, Knights of Badassdom, you know, he's been around, but it's a comedy. It's a, for horror movie buffs, it's just two wannabe filmmakers, that, you know, just live together and they have girlfriends and it's set up kind of like a live audience show where there's what do they call that? The laughter, like a laugh track. Ugh. that plays automatically. No, but it's on purpose. It's okay. On purpose.
So it's
like
part of the joke.
They're doing it to make fun of those types of sitcoms.
Gotcha.
But they're doing it for horror fans. And, you know, Dee Snider is in it. Dave Brockie from GWAR. But I mean, it has cameos by, you know, Bill Moseley, Tony Todd, Kane Hodder. Daniel Harris is in it, you know, Seth Green, John Landis, for Christ's sakes. Like, it's got a great cameo thing, and it's really well written. But if you do dive into it, the first few episodes will catch you off guard. Because when I was told by somebody to watch it, and I was given the second season to review, and I'm like, well, I don't really do TV shows at all. But I'll go back and I'll watch the first season, and I popped it in, and like within like two episodes, I was like, "Shit, like this is gonna be fucking long," because I'm not really digging this. But once you understand, like, it takes a while. That's what I'm trying to prep you guys, is that it takes a while to actually get to know what they're trying to do, and then when they actually hit it, like when they hit you with it, then it gets just fucking overly funny. And it's a great TV show for fucking horror fans because it's fucking bloody as hell. And, you know, it's a comedy. It's really bizarre how it's set up, but it's really well written. And fucking Adam Green is actually a decent actor. That's the weird part, along with Joe Lynch. I mean, I imagine they play themselves, but it's really well done. Hmm. So I know that's a real odd pick as first as a TV show, but both of those are on Blu-ray, both seasons. And they're very short. Like, there's only like probably 20-some episodes through the whole thing. But yeah, it's definitely something to check out. It's really, really good.
No, I've been listening to Joe and Adam's podcast, The Movie Crypt, for a while. And I have a sort of a love-hate relationship with the show because there's things about it that annoy me, things about it that Adam does on the show that really annoy me, but they bring on really cool guests and they talk about – the thing is they talk about that show all the time because it's like Adam's baby. It's clearly like one of the things he's – I think he said he worked on it for like 13 years or something. And I had the same experience you had, Brad. When I started to watch the first episode – I was like, "Oh, this is like cringe inducing. Like, I can't."
Yeah, it seems like it's really bad.
So I need to go through and get to the point you're talking about.
Because when I first watched it, I was like, "Man, this is just falling short." But it's meant to do that. Like, it's set up almost perfectly as kind of a bad TV show, but they kind of do their own thing with it. Like, they're obviously making fun of TV shows in general, but like, I don't know. It's just really well done. Because I mean, they have a cat. Axel is their cat, but it's obviously a stuffed animatronic cat that just sits there and meows. But like, remember those fucking shows where shit like that would happen?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's like, you know, the talking animal or fucking Alf or some bullshit. You know,
hey, don't knock like, Alf.
Alf's pretty bad. But you know, and plus Laura Ortiz that plays Laura, and then Corey English, who plays Corey, they're super cute and they're just so good. Laura Ortiz is like the highlight of the show. Just the one-liners that they hit. And once you start like picking it up and, you know, and they like reference old episodes and shit, which I love when TV shows do that. It hits, and it's really fucking funny.
Cool.
So,
now I've been meaning to check that out. I was kind of hoping that it would come to Netflix at some point, but I may just, you know, bite it and buy the Blu-rays. But the neat thing they do mention on the podcast is that they own the show. I mean, they had licensed it to FearNet, and people were like, oh, when FearNet went under, they're like, oh, the show's gone. But no, because they own it, and there seems to be some talk of a third season. So this is a cool rec for Brad, in that it's going to keep going. And I think people could get in now before the third season. I'm pretty sure they made it sound like the third season is going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Well, they did. Like, they actually, about a year ago, they announced that they have all the episodes written. They're going to do it. But then fucking David Brockie died.
That's right.
And he's a big, big part of the show. Like, yeah. He actually plays the character from Guar. And it's funny because if anybody – I watched – the only TV shows that I really watched back in the day were things from the 90s. And all, like, 90s tropes that are in TV shows, they do. Like, David Brockie's character is, you know, the guy from Guar who lives in Adam's closet. It plays part of his personality. So whenever
like
he's going through a hard
head
time,
or something?
Yeah, like he goes in his room and slams the door, and then David Brockie comes out and he's like, "What's wrong, Adam?" And then he tells him, and, you know, he's like, "You need to stop being such a fucking pussy." You know, and he'll just do things, and you know, his big dick swinging, you know, his fake dick, and it's just a really well done show. Like I said, it takes a bit, but man, it's so well done.
Cool.
All right, you got me back on board with it.
All right, looks like I got to check that out. It'd be nice if it came to streaming, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. Glad to have Brian back on the show.
Yeah.
Pleasure, but, gentlemen.
It's
glad
always,
to be back.
Always good. We're working on some interviews and stuff like that. So next couple months should be really, really cool. I'm not announcing anything because stuff always, you never know how things are going to go with these. But Brad's been busting his ass. So, trying to get people on the show. So, we got some stuff lined up. You can find us over at oneofus.net. You can find us at our website, thescreamcast.com. All the links to our social media is on thescreamcast.com. Drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you either on social media, Facebook, Twitter, or email. It's readme@thescreamcast.com.
So, do you ever get any emails?
No, never, never. except like your publicist wanting us to like, you know, talk about their crappy crap. Other than that, no, but we would love to hear from you. We talk back. The communication is weird. Cause like when podcasts first started, there wasn't Twitter and stuff. And I think we get a lot of that each day on Twitter. So, just drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. And, where was I going? What's going on here? I think that's it, guys.
I have no idea.
Nerdly.co.uk over there. We appreciate that they post the show as well. All right.
I love your outros.
We gotta, you know, they suck, but
you would think, being that you do it every episode, you would like master it, but it just gets like. It gets better and better.
At least I don't sound like a pre-recording. I mean, I could just pre-record this shit and put it at the end. At least I'm real, Brad.
I like it.
No, I like it. I like it.
We're also trying. We have a handful of t-shirts left, mostly mediums. And please take them off my hands just someone buy them. I'm just sick of looking at this box. What I want to do is try to get more merch ideas, maybe some stickers next or something to help you if you get help promote the show. I don't know, figure it out. But I want to get this box out of my freaking room. So I got blown out some t-shirts, $12 shipped, and please take them, please. And that's it, guys. Any final thoughts?
You know what? Since I sold everybody on Death Ring, you should have let me do the t-shirts.
I know. I'm a horrible salesman. There's a reason I'm not in sales.
Yeah.
How about Death Ring t-shirts? I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I don't know. No. You're onto something.
We have ideas. It just, things cost money. T-shirts are hard to sling, man.
No, it's t-shirts for sure. Hard.
Well, right. It's for a stupid ass podcast.
True, but the design by Kevin Spencer is awesome.
No,
it's a beauty.
I agree.
A beauty.
I agree.
And $12 shipped is a bargain.
I think so.
Totally.
Unfortunately, they're mediums, and I've learned not to stock so many mediums.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. God. All right, that's...
Dude, do you just want me to start singing again?
No, we're done. We're done. All of you guys have a great week. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
Wow, you really cut me short.
Nice, Will. Welcome. Glad you could join us.
I'm so happy.
Brian and I have done the show, man. We're done, so.
Yeah.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
Phantom, Nightcrawler, and then our pick of the week.
Oh.
Did you forget that?
Today already has been crazy.
It's
so
like 8:30.
It's 8:30, man. What happened? You all right?
Yeah. You got the UK stuff too?
No, that's why, you know.
Oh, I guess you don't have the Blu-ray announcement.
That's why we're a team. Holy shit, episode 50, guys. Episode 50.
Nice.
Oh, this is supposed to be something special.
Gosh, I do.
Too bad.
Anniversary shows are bullshit. I never listen to those.
Fucking covering Phantom of the Opera.